This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Hello there. Welcome back to another episode of the Sexology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali, and today we're talking about something that many people experience but don't always feel comfortable discussing: reduced sensitivity and delayed ejaculation. In today's episode, we're unpacking what's actually happening beneath the surface. We'll talk about how to tell the difference between medical and nervous system factors, some of the biggest myths that can actually make things worse, and what role partner play, sometimes without realizing it, in shaping performance pressure. I'm joined by Dr. Arthur L. Burnett, a globally recognized urologist at Johns Hopkins University who has spent decades advancing sexual medicine and pioneering treatments that have improved lives of millions. His work was instrumental in the development of erectile dysfunction therapies, and he continues to lead the field in understanding male sexual health. And before we dive in, I want to share a quick resource with you. If you're looking to bring more connection and variety in your intimacy, I have a free foreplay checklist with 9 simple ideas you can try tonight. This is especially relevant to today's episode because foreplay isn't just about warming up. It's about building arousal gradually, reducing pressure, and helping your nervous system stay engaged, which can directly support sensitivity and pleasure. You can download it instantly using the link in the show notes. All right, let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology podcast. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Arthur Burnett to our show. Dr. Burnett, welcome to our show.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
I am excited for this conversation. Issues around delayed ejaculation, loss of sensitivity are one of those comments that I hear a lot from our listeners and from my own clients as well. And I'm sure as a urologist, you see a lot of it in your practice. So when people come in for issues around kind of reduced penile sensitivity, what do you usually think is happening beneath the surface?
Sure. Well, I guess it's a matter here of kind of dissecting into the problem a little bit more. Is it something that's been lifelong? Has it been something that's kind of a new revelation? Is there some sort of new sexual experience, some sort of new kind of benchmark that the patient somehow or the subject that you're discussing with is relating? Many times there are bodily changes, new health conditions that can impact sexual functioning in different ways. So I need to get a little bit more of that background here. In addition, you know, I think patients many times may have expectations about sexual function, and we may get into this a little bit more, that may be a little bit unrealistic, and we need to make sure we're clear about that. And finally, patients may have certain kinds of sexual habits that may have been behaviors that they had some association with certain sexual performances and previously, and maybe with new partners or new situations. That is a troubling thing to try and reconcile. So you see, there's a lot of layers here, and it's a matter of understanding all these different possible contributors.
Absolutely. And you're right. That could be multi-layers. And sometimes people think there's just like this, most of the time, at least what people I see, they think it's only physiological, or could be only physiological, when it could be psychological and relational, as you mentioned. For someone who's younger, and like, let's start from there, and they're younger, then they're experiencing delay ejaculation, and it's like very frustrating for them. What would you think about as far as kind of physical kind of issues that they might struggle with?
Well, if they're younger, I guess the suggestion is maybe they've had it lifelong. It didn't did not appear perhaps after other relationships and or new health conditions in the body, and even medications patients sometimes get on, which we can talk about. So if a younger person is having this, then I'd have to kind of get a sense of just, you know, what is their sense of sexual activity? What is their orientation with regard to sexual behaviors and experiences and their early ages of life? And from my perspective, certainly I'm all inclusive about how a person behaves and how they perceive they should be functioning. But many times we have to understand what is the true biology of a person, a man or a woman, and then try to give some realistic perspective, because sometimes that is where there are challenges. Maybe there's a sense that somebody should have a certain kind of behavior, and that may not actually be true. So I think it's a matter here, again, in a young person wondering whether, with early experiences, whether we should really understand, you know, what their perspective is. And then, of course, if they have any other health issues, certainly figure that out too.
What are some other health issues? I know diabetes can have an impact, but what are other heart health issues that you think impact people duration, or like leading to the delayed ejaculation?
Sure. So aside from relational things and maybe some psychological or mental health kind of perspectives, which I kind of alluded to, yeah, along the realm of health conditions, yes, I do see this with diabetes. I see this in any other kind of neurologic issues sometimes. Sometimes there are neurologic issues, multiple sclerosis, and maybe some autoimmune changes and other physiologic changes that impact the nervous system that can occur even in young people. Sensitivity changes elsewhere in the body, sensations, and we call it sensory neuropathies, kind of a fancy medical term for just not picking up sensations in different parts of the body. And sometimes it's elusive as to exactly what is going on, and getting a neurologist involved may be a right thing to do if there are some other areas of the body that are somehow not functioning like they should. So again, these are a variety of things that we think of. A commentary here also about hormones, because that also comes up, and then we may want to touch on that. You know, I think there's been a bit of a controversial subject. We do know that male hormones does influence all aspects of sexual functioning, can optimize erections, although it's not the critical piece there. It may have something to do with the ejaculatory function and even sexual desire, which has the biggest kind of relation to male hormones, desire, libido, that sort of thing. But it can also impact orgasmic function. And while controversial, I still identify some men who have had some testosterone deficiencies, and that may influence their having kind of an ejaculatory function that they thought they had in the past.
Dr. Burnett, I'm so glad that you talked about hormones and impact of it on sexual functioning for men. I know that some men, they kind of like, they go overboard with hormones. They start shooting testosterone without being prescribed. And some people are very cautious. I had clients that like through testing, they had like significantly lower testosterone. They're not even in the range, but lower than what's considered normal. And they wanted to do it based on habit and lifestyle changes. So tell us a little bit about, so with hormones, what would be pros and cons of using them, and you said it's a controversial treatment, but how would that impact the ejaculation?
Sure. Well, the reason I mentioned controversy, and of course, you know, that's kind of a charged word there. You know, in some respects, there are guidelines that make it very strictly stated that, you know, get a blood test. If it's not abnormal, then it's normal. And then that's pretty much the end of it. But I think we should also recognize that patient symptoms and their presentation is part of understanding, you know, the situation here of testosterone deficiency. And it's possible that somebody may have a borderline normal level, but it may have been somewhat higher earlier in life. So we have to consider some of these factors and also look for maybe causes that's influencing that. But how does it impact ejaculatory function? Well, we just know that our nervous system that regulates erections regulates ejaculatory function. The tissues that are involved really are all very much sensitized to male hormones, much as in the female body, that estrogen has something to do with a variety of bodily functions. But testosterone has a lot to do with sexual function, also has to do with physical strength and physical composition and so forth, and also cognitive and functioning, thinking and things of that sort. I kind of give these three pillars. So there is that sexual function association. And there really is, I think, some evidence on a molecular level, scientific level, that it can influence these aspects of sexual function, really do. So I think it is real, and I think we do have to recognize that.
When people use it, you mentioned kind of like lifestyle, different factors. I know that, as you said, body composition many people, when they exercise, especially weight training and strength training, I see changes in their health. Now we see my practice in LA, and I see a lot of usage with GLP-1 for weight management. And not necessarily people who are diabetes, like people of all different sizes, which there's no judgment on that. But can it, and I hear mixing. Some people say it creates kind of backfires in their desires, and some people find it useful. What have you observed around that?
Well, you mean testosterone alone or with the GLP-1?
The GLP-1 overall, like I would imagine, has some impact on hormones. I'm kind of curious as far as like ejaculatory control and erection. What have you noticed? Like, because I know it's such a newer field.
It is a newer field. And I think that we're still trying to understand some of this. And I think rather than get too far ahead of ourselves, I think we just need more studies. We need to understand this more. I mean, I guess the thought here with GLP-1 agents, these agents that are meant for diabetes control and weight loss and really have some sort of physiologic impact, that they conceivably are doing something beneficial. Although there have been some kind of considerations out there that it may actually have some potentially adverse effects. It triggers if you come off of it, or maybe it does have some bodily effects that may not be quite so beneficial in some people's bodies. I know I'm sounding a little bit evasive, but it's because I don't want to be too committal. I don't think I really have a good handle to generalize just yet. I think we'd have to study this a bit more, but I think it is of some concern, and I'm glad they were at least raising the discussion.
When I first heard about it, I felt it would be kind of like a positive thing, right? Because that can change your body. But ever since, like, I work with clients and I hear they have some mixed experiences. So I'm glad that they do more research on that. Kind of going back to your topic, as far as like behavioral thing. So, but when we're talking about younger men, sometimes they tell me that the delayed ejaculation comes from the hormone. And I know some sex educators talk about it. It's just the way that they masturbate. We call it death grip. Is that truly can impact people's sensitivity?
Absolutely. That's what I was alluding to before. And you're getting now with this, to take a little deeper dive into this discussion. Because sometimes I think individuals, and maybe it's younger men too now, who may have early on been involved in self-stimulation, masturbation, may have had a certain way of deriving a stimulus. Things that almost sound, you know, bizarre, like, you know, lying on a hard, you know, rug or something and just moving in a forceful way and to get a stimulation or doing some other kind of activity that had helped them get to a level of real climax before. And then they make move now and have a partner. And that partner may have a certain kind of sexual behavior, a certain kind of sexual activity that may not mimic what he had previously thought was the way in which he would get the best stimulus. And that's where the problem comes in. And so I'm not trying to be too graphic, but hopefully I'm describing this well. And it's almost this prior experience and a way of behavior that then can never really be achieved, perhaps with just normal sexual penetration or other kinds of sexual functioning that just doesn't achieve the same sort of stimulus. So working through these kinds of habits, working through the kind of stimulus that's involved, possibly getting involved with sexologists and mental health specialists, trying to reorient with different ways of achieving satisfaction for that patient and his partner and trying to figure out what can work. All of these are various approaches, but it may not come necessarily to me as a men's health urologic surgeon to implement anything surgical here. That's just not the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And I know I have clients that, like, as a sex therapist and psychologist, I'm not necessarily against self-stimulation or masturbation for people. But you're right that sometimes it can, the way that people engage can cause issues. And at times I recommend that maybe use something like toys that can help with kind of like reducing the pressure so they can retrain their body. And what I'm hearing is that is in these type of cases, it's something that people can regain the sensitivity. Is that correct? After like changing the habit?
Yeah, so conceivably that's so. I'm not sure there's, you know, really changing sensory thresholds and whatnot, but just maybe trying to figure out other ways that can achieve enough stimulus that can be satisfactory.
Another group of people that I hear that they talk about loss of sensitivity and experiencing delayed ejaculation is people who are in later stages of life. These people had not necessarily much issues younger, they're relatively healthy, but now they're experiencing delayed ejaculation. What could be cause of that on relatively healthy people?
Well, again, you're saying relatively healthy. So we're excluding some of these neurological illnesses, diabetes, and maybe even some kind of insidious metabolic changes that occur when people get older. You know, go see your primary doctor and you find out that, yeah, you are having some subacute cardiovascular changes or other metabolic changes in the body. So these things need to be recognized. Also, and we may get into this discussion, there are certain medications that we do know influence ejaculatory function. We can talk about that a little bit more too. But you're saying some of the older people, why does this happen? Again, I think it's also in the absence of these other factors, you know, is it hormones getting older and male hormones changes? Is it also just new relationships as some individuals get older and that happens? And really kind of getting in sync with a new older partner, you know, I mean, this may be kind of the person you're thinking about, but you now may lost a partner and they're re-engaging in some sort of new relationship with a new kind of sexual approach or stimulation, and working through really kind of what's going on with that person's sexual health history. Yeah, and what's new in their lives may actually give you some insights.
I can imagine that's, at least based on what I'm hearing from my clients, it is very discouraging when people had kind of like easier sexual experiences, they were able to experience completion easier with the partner, but now they feel like, I have clients that's a few months that's not happening for them. And I know that psychologists, sometimes it could be related to OCD, could be attention, maintaining attention, maybe like there are a number of different things can happen. But physiologically, are they kind of, as you mentioned, medication. Tell us more about medication that can, as a side effect, cause issues with ejaculation, and are there medication that can help with it?
All right. So there are medications out there that can be offensive. Now, as men get older, they start to have lower urinary tract symptoms. Many get on medications called alpha blockers. Flomax, you know, is kind of a trade name for tamsulosin, the drug that's very commonly prescribed. And that is designed to help with urination. It's designed to help relax the tone of the urinary outlet. Men can urinate better many times getting on these medications. But one of the realities of these medications is that they can have some ejaculatory dysfunction issues. They can have, some lightheadedness and dizziness. These things may occur with so-called alpha blockers, but also ejaculatory dysfunctions can occur. And so there you have it. There's a big example of a medication. And so reviewing a person's medication history. Another category is these antidepressants that many patients may get on. And these antidepressants also have some inhibitory effects on the ejaculatory reflex. And so we have to recognize that these medications that they're on with intent to correct other conditions in the body may have adverse effects on one's ejaculatory response, and therefore their kind of their orgasmic experience there. So I think we have to recognize potentially these effects, and conceivably in women too. I don't see as many women for sexual dysfunction, but I imagine that these antidepressants may also have that. You may have seen that in your practice as well, that perhaps their nervous system reflexes, and that may have to do with some of these fancy neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine. And I don't want to get too complex with your audience out there, but you know, we think we have some handle on various kinds of neurotransmitters and various neurological aspects of our body, but still we don't know everything here. We still need to figure things out.
Are there medication that can help with ejaculation, like making it shorter, like the time it takes?
Right. So the opposite of that is, as you're saying, what can be offered to correct that? And we say there's certain pathways that we think are chemical factors, neurochemicals that have to help with ejaculation that are being interfered with. Why not promote those, right? And that's a great idea. It's just how well can we really achieve that? Many have looked for agents that are alpha stimulants, phenylpropanolamine, various kinds of dietary drugs out there that are, we call them some pathomimetics, which has to do with driving the adrenaline system, things of that sort. Some of the weight loss drugs even are thought to be possibly stimulants to help with ejaculatory responses. And the answer is it's very unclear how successful they are. There may just be certain kinds of sensory thresholds and certain chemical levels that we just can't quite achieve with just medication. So I think the jury's still out. More work may need to be done to figure out what kind of medications really can help somebody have a better ejaculatory or orgasmic response. And I don't think we have a really good handle on what's done is a well-prescribed intervention.
Well, my recommendation for many of my female clients that they struggle with, and I say in a minute why I say female clients, that they struggle with delayed, in a way, orgasm is using sex toys. The reason I say women, because there's like more product there and the increasing of the sensation and kind of like the pressure, temperature, all of those things can impact people being able to experience orgasms quicker. Or I have even clients that they learn to experience orgasm from different ways of stimulation. And I know we see that at least with my clients with prostate cancer. And so that can also be another offering for people that are just like maybe sensitivity issues. But you also hear a lot of myths. There's just like a galaxy of myths out there. So what are some common myths people believe about delayed ejaculation that you think make the problem worse?
Yeah, common myths. Wow. You know, I think it just has to do maybe more with a sense that hormones are always involved, that you know, definitely is a matter here of I need more testosterone. If I don't get that, that's a problem. I think that just fits with other aspects of male sexual dysfunction as well. I'm thinking that that's a be-all and end-all for even erections. That's probably the biggest one. I don't know. Tell me, what I'd be curious to hear what you had to, since you raised that, what myths you have heard.
Well, with delayed ejaculation, one of the things I hear that like, oh, it's probably you're not into your partner, right? That like, that's the kind of like assumption people go into, especially when sometimes people are able to ejaculate with themselves. And like, maybe partner could be an issue, but majority of experiences people have, it's beyond that, like whether it's like some physiological issues or like, as you said, it could be a side effect of medication or even the way you masturbate. Like I have clients that they, unless like they can have intercourse if they are identifying straight for a long time, but unless they use their hand, they're not able to complete. So, but like when the partner sees that, it can be hurtful saying that, okay, my partner is not completing with me or I'm not attractive enough. But as a psychologist, I know for many people, it could be other factors. The other thing is people think it's always about sex, but I see a good correlation with my clients that they have OCD with delayed ejaculation. So that's also can show itself that way. So these are the few things that I see as a psychologist. And I know that it's a tricky thing if you're a partner of someone that's just struggling sexual function, because we're usually not good with talking about these things. But what are your invitation you have for partners that they want to support the partner who's struggling with delayed ejaculation or loss of sensitivity? What can they do to support their partner?
Sure, sure. Well, it's interesting to hear your observations. You know, speaking from my position as a surgeon and a urologist by training and men's health specialist, it's interesting to hear, you know, some of these aspects that you bring, I think, so well to this topic, because some of these things may not always come to me with this so-called somatic or physical interventions. But I think the point that you're making here is one that I still very much strongly believe, that, you know, sexual function in many ways is a couple's experience, and understanding, you know, not just how delayed ejaculation impacts the subject, but also his or her partner and interferes with that relationship. So I think it is important to understand that dynamic and understand, you know, the other perspective and try to work through both sides to achieve the best response. You asked now what I can kind of take away as recommendations, or what do you offer as takeaway recommendations, messages, or what have you. And my thought, frankly, is that we should not minimize it. And too often, I'll see in my practice for men undergoing various treatments, such as prostate cancer treatments and others, is that a partner's supposedly supportive, like, oh, honey, don't worry about it. You'll be fine if you can't, you know, achieve the way you want to achieve and this and that. And to me, while that sounds very supportive, I think that I try to communicate to the patient and the partner, even in the room, that the man wants to be functional. And while you still love him if he's dysfunctional, and maybe that's something you're thinking is very supportive, that doesn't really address the problem. I think we really have to like get to the problem, because he wants to still perform. He still wants to have the function he wants to have. And so my message is, and I know this has been a long-winded answer, the message is don't dismiss it by being supportive. Be supportive, but also let's talk about how we think we can address it. And let's just be forthright with regard to observations, with regard to intentions, with regard to one person and the other person's perspectives. And let's try to figure out where we can find a way of getting to a solution. And sometimes they put down our embarrassment, put down our taboos, put down our inhibitions, what have you, in any way. And let's just try and have a very open discussion and try to find what's needed to get both sides of it, a couple relationship to be happy.
I think that's such an important distinction, that don't say like, oh, it's okay if it's not working, right? The message is like, there's like the partner wants to be wanted. So mm-hmm. I think that's important to keep that in mind. And there are so many different ways that psychologically, physiologically, people can be able to get the result that they want or have good enough sexual experiences. The last question that is in mind is about cock rings. Some cock rings, they say it helps with strengthening the ejaculation. Do we have evidence for that? Have you heard that?
I'm not sure I've really heard that. I mean, certainly there may be anecdotal evidence for that. There may be storylines of some who find various kinds of toys, sex toys, various devices, various things that change sensation in certain parts of the body, may allow kind of certain behaviors to proceed that derive a high level of satisfaction. So I'm not discouraging any of that. If that's certainly beneficial and derives a level of satisfaction for a patient, hallelujah, go proceed. But just do things in a safe way now. The constrictive rings that are on the penis too long can be damaging. Things that are inserted in parts of the body in an unnatural way, in a painful way, please be careful. I have had patients in my years as a surgeon, we've had to extract things and do some pretty amazing things just to try and get somebody back to a situation they can even be normal again. So please be careful out there. Let's not do some extreme things that could be hurtful to your body.
Absolutely. So for our listeners, I'm sure they are curious to learn more about you, about your practice. What are some of the places they can find you?
Well, thank you for asking. And, I do have a website just under my name, Dr. Arthur Burnett, MD. I have a couple books out there. One book I wrote 2 years ago, among different books on prostate cancer and other topics. This one is called Manhood RX. Just look my name up. It's right there on Amazon. And it talks about different male sexual dysfunction disorders, including orgasmic functioning and so forth. So, getting a little bit more information in a way from individuals, yourself, myself, who put out hopefully reliable and evidenced descriptions and discussions of this sort, I think, are where you can access the good information.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Burnett, for your time and all the wonderful work that you do. And hopefully we'll have you in our show in future.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Bye there. As we wrap up, I want to leave you with this. When it comes to sensitivity, arousal, and connection, small shifts can make a big difference. It's not about doing more. It's about slowing down, staying present, and creating the right conditions for your body to respond. And that's exactly why foreplay matters so much. Not as a step you rush through, but as a way to build connection, reduce pressure, and support your nervous system staying engaged. If you're looking for a simple place to start, I created a free foreplay checklist with 9 ideas you can try tonight. It's designed to help you bring more variety, connection, and intentionality into your intimate moments without overthinking it. You can download it using the link in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Sexology Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.